700 WLW podcast. Catch Scott Sloan weekdays at 9:06 on 700 WLW.
Scott Sloan on 700 WLW. You go to my blog now, 700WLW.com. There are a ton of videos. One's, I think, 6 million views already in the last 90 days of people on Ambien, the sleep aid, prescription sleep aid Ambien, which we've heard stories about, but until I heard from a physician just how scary this stuff can be, I had no idea myself. He is a sleep clinician. He's a doctor. Robert Rosenberg joins me on 700 WLW to talk about the odd things, the parasomnias people have in their sleep. Dr. Rosenberg, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. In between breaks of talking about Manti Te'o and he did what he did, why, I want to talk a little bit about sleep here. And that is this. You're a doctor. I don't know. Have you prescribed Ambien for people before?
Well, I'm a sleep specialist, Scott. I've got a couple of sleep labs in Arizona, and we have a website, answersforsleep.com, that answers people's questions, and certainly I have prescribed pretty much every sleep aid there is known on the market.
As far as Ambien goes, I think it's kind of like people see it and laugh, but I'm looking at these videos of people doing things. They go out and they'll sleepwalk, they'll have conversations, they will do things and be active. They'll kind of act like they're drunk. But what scares me about that is if a drug gives those significant side effects, how many people are out there maybe driving or doing something they don't know what they're doing and could really be a danger not only themselves but people around them?
Sure. The Ambien thing, I mean, we need to put it in perspective. It's also known as Zolpidem. It's more commonly prescribed now as a generic. And yes, there have been incidents, obviously, of sleep-related eating disorder where people get up and eat. People have been known to drive cars on Ambien. But of course, that's also happened on most of the other sleep aids as well. It seems to be occurring a little more frequently with this medication than others. The FDA recently recommended that the dosage be cut in half for women. That was last week. And actually, in my practice, I'm going to be cutting the dose in half for men. But we also have to realize that a lot of these folks who are having the parasomnias, which means undesirable experiences or movements associated with sleep, blamed on the Ambien. In some cases, when we look further and bring them into the laboratory and study them, we find that they have an underlying primary sleep disorder, which was causing the problem. And in some cases, not all, but in some, it wasn't the Zolpidem, but it was untreated sleep apnea, untreated restless leg syndrome, stress or lack of sleep, which is common in this country now, that is actually the leading cause of parasomnias. For instance, a study done on people who ate in the middle of the night found about 5% of them were due to drugs like Zolpidem, and 95% were due to other sleep disorders that caused them to basically sleepwalk, go to the kitchen, turn on the burners, or do whatever they did.
Good
in some
God.
Cases, drink perfume in the middle of the night. So we need to look at it as more than just a problem with Zolpidem or Ambien, because that really is only a minor cause of it, but it's getting all the publicity because it's more exciting.
It's the drug,
and,
yeah.
And it gets the attention of the newspapers.
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing, too, in this country, whether it's guns, Coca-Cola, or Ambien, we have a fixation with blaming things on inanimate objects rather than the actions and what maybe the underlying cause are, like, you know, school shootings and, you know, it's guns and, well, you know, mental health is certainly an issue with that, too. In talking to someone like you, it's, okay, the drug, while prescribed by someone who's a doctor that can do that, it's a good thing. It's a good tool. But to say that the underlying cause is false. So I guess the takeaway here is don't be scared if your doctor prescribes you Ambien.
Yeah, and I think if you have any abnormal behaviors on the drug, obviously you tell them right away and you stop the drug. That's what I tell my patients, who do tweak it on occasion. We try to use other forms of treatment for insomnia. We try to go with more with cognitive behavioral therapies. But in some people who just really won't respond to anything, we go with medications. And unfortunately, some of the medications on the market are too expensive. And then some of the other drug medications, other than Zolpidem or Ambien, have worse side effects than Ambien. I mean, some of the antidepressants that are unfortunately prescribed for sleep commonly keep people asleep the whole day long. I mean, they can't function.
The sleep medicine doctor, Robert Rosenberg, on 700 WLW this morning in the Scott Sloan Show. How come the older I get, the sooner I have to go to bed? How come I can't stay up past midnight?
Well, actually, what happens is our circadian clock begins to change. It's called advanced sleep phase syndrome when it gets to be its extreme. And you see that in your 70s and 80s. We go through two phases in life. During adolescence, we can't get to sleep frequently. before, I mean, midnight or 1 in the morning, and a lot of kids struggle getting to school because their circadian clock and their brain called the hypothalamus, there are clock genes, and they are set, unfortunately, they begin to get set to go to bed at 1 or 2 in the morning, and your body produces melatonin later and later. Then as we get older, that begins to reverse, and the body begins to produce melatonin, which is the sleep hormone, at earlier and earlier hours. And in some people, it gets to the point where some of my older patients can't stay awake past 7 or 8 o'clock at night. They wake up at 4 in the morning, and although they have plenty of sleep, socially it's a problem for them because the rest of the world is asleep, and they're awake, and they find that very difficult to deal with. But that's normally what's going on, is you're having a circadian shift in your biorhythms.
Is there any way to fix that?
Well, you know, it's normal, but yes, there are ways. Like, let's say in your case, you're getting to bed at 8 o'clock at night now, and you'd like to stay up till 10. Well, bright light therapy is the strongest treatment you can use, especially blue light. But you can buy yourself a light box, which you can get online. And some of my elderly patients who are falling asleep at 6 or 7, we tell them to start about 2 hours, about 7 or 8 o'clock, when they would normally be falling asleep, turn on the light box. You look at it indirectly. You could even put it above a television or on the kitchen table. And that can help them to stay awake for an extra few hours. And then they wake up at a later hour, and then we tell them to continue the therapy for a few weeks. And at times, that really works. And for the opposite, the kids and the young people who want to get to bed at an earlier hour and can't until 2 or 3 in the morning, we tell them to expose themselves to bright sunlight early in the morning upon awakening. And if you do that, that will shift your circadian clock back to allow you to fall asleep at an earlier hour that night.
I learned something new there. The fact that I'm 45 and considered elderly, that's frightening to me. I can only imagine what the next 40-something years are going to show me here. A lot of people are diagnosed with sleep apnea, but it's one of those things, as a sleep doctor, that you would diagnose. However, most people who have it probably wouldn't know they did. How do I know to go to you?
Well, there are 18 million people, and only 20% of who have sleep apnea, only 20% of the United States has been diagnosed. So you're obviously, the most common symptom would be if you have a bed partner and the bed partner says you snore habitually every night, that is a pretty good indication. If you're fatigued during the day, if you're sleepy during the day and you don't know why, that is a good indication. If you're having trouble concentrating, focusing, planning, organizing, paying attention, that is a good indication. If you're beginning to have or you have had heart trouble or a stroke or a transient ischemic attack, the incidence of sleep apnea in patients such as that is upwards of 60 to 70%, because with sleep apnea is one of the things that precipitates stroke and heart attacks. And if you have high blood pressure that the doctor is having difficulty controlling, requiring 3 or more medications, and your blood pressure is still over 140 on the top, 60% of those people have sleep apnea. So it's and unfortunately, a lot of the people with the heart attack and strokes we found in recent studies were not sleepy. So they've gotten to the point now where the cardiologist and the neurologist are referring them for sleep studies, even if they aren't sleepy. But of course, the main symptom in most men is sleepiness. Women present more often with depression and fatigue with sleep apnea.
Interesting.
The last thing is, if you find yourself waking up repeatedly during the night and you don't know why, that is extremely common in people with sleep apnea.
Wow, that's scary. It's the number one thing for that. They're going to recommend lose weight. Is that generally the case?
Well, the first thing is CPAP, because we want you to lose weight, but if we don't treat the sleep apnea, it's almost impossible to lose weight, because sleep apnea causes the production of hormones that stimulate the appetite, and it also inhibits the production of a hormone called leptin that inhibits the appetite. So we want to get you started on treatment and then try to get you to lose weight, and then if you can lose a really significant amount of weight, maybe we can retest you down the line and get you off of the CPAP or the mandibular advancement device or whatever. But the first thing is to treat it, because it's far too dangerous disease to allow to go on for a year or two or three while you struggle with your weight.
Dr. Robert Rosenberg, sleep medicine expert on the Scott Sloan Show, 700 WLW. Let's talk about this study that came out recently, Doctor. 1 in 24 drivers fall asleep at some point as they drive in a car, and that is frightening for this very reason. I crunched the numbers and came up with this, that there it's about 4% of the driving population any one time is falling asleep and driving, and yet less than 1% of the driving population any one time may be drunk while driving, and yet more of the attention, most of the focus put on the latter and not the prior.
Right.
What needs to change in order for something to happen regarding that?
Okay, the two main things that are going to be causing people to have difficulty with driving, first of all, sleep apnea again. And
yeah.
that's if you have sleep apnea and you stop breathing, we found more than 20 times an hour, we put you on a driving simulator, your driving ability will be the equivalent of somebody who has who blows a .05 on an alcohol test. So that's the first thing. The second thing is sleep deprivation. Too many people are trying to get by with 4 or 5 hours of sleep. They're burning the candle at both ends. They don't think it affects them. But again, if you put those people on the driving simulator, their ability to react, their brake time, the reaction time is significantly and severely impaired. So those are the two main things are lack of sleep, people trying to get by. And, of course, the other one is people driving too long. People trying to drive for 12, 13 hours. You know, I'm going to get down to Florida from when I used to live on the East Coast from New York, and I'm going to make it in one day. Well, you may make it. On the other hand, you might kill yourself or somebody else. And then finally, the sleeping pills. We talked about Ambien, but also other sleep aids. Got to be careful. A lot of people will take a sleep aid at 3 or 4 in the morning when they finally say, geez, I got to get some sleep tonight. And then they have to be up at 7 o'clock in the morning for work. Well, those sleeping pills may last for 6 to 8 hours. They were meant to be taken at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So you're driving around in traffic with a sleeping pill in you, and your reaction time is blown. So that's that. And then finally, there are people with respiratory problems who don't want to see a doctor. They're driving around with low oxygen levels. I used to be a lung specialist,
okay. And
I had many patients who I tell, either you wear your oxygen while you're driving, or we're going to have to report you to the motor vehicles and get your license pulled.
What do you recommend for truck drivers that might drive during the day 1 week and then overnight people who work swing shifts?
Well, the truck drivers lately, the federal agencies are enforcing a limitation on the amount of time they can drive and how much sleep they have to get between driving. And they're also enforcing the fact that if they have a 17-inch neck, and there are other physical attributes, that they go and get a sleep study to rule out sleep apnea, because the incidence of sleep apnea in the truck driving population is about 16 to 20%, as opposed to 8% in the general population. And so the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Association is now getting into the act, and they're beginning to pass or to propose regulations, and a lot of the states are following them at this point, such as my state of Arizona, even before it's been made into a formal law.
Dr. Robert Rosenberg, the website is answersforsleep.com, answersforsleep.com, and rather interested in parasomnias and how that affects your daily life. It's
right.
One of those things that doesn't get the attention it should, because it really impacts a lot of people.
Oh, it does. It does horrendously. I mean, sexsomnia, and it ruins couples, marriages, and people who act out dreams. We call that REM behavior disorder, and they have violent dreams, and they beat up on their spouse, or they hurt themselves, and they don't go to a doctor to discuss it, and it's something that can be diagnosed and treated.
What's sexsomnia?
Well, sexsomnia is kind of a form of sleepwalking, where the patient, like all parasomnias, what happens is you have a partial arousal from sleep, where your lower brain stem, your brain centers, we call them central pattern generators, they awaken, but your higher cortical centers, where your judgment, memory, and impulse control, they don't awaken. And the people are literally in these parasomnias that occur out of deep sleep, or what we call slow wave sleep. And sexsomnia is an example of one of them, where the sexual behavior is actually, they act out sex. Sometimes it may be masturbation or thrusting, or in some cases, actual sexual intercourse with the partner. But just like a sleepwalker, they have no conscious idea of what they're doing. When you wake them up, they have no memory for what they did. And it's becoming more commonly recognized. I did a TV show yesterday, which was very much devoted to that. And basically, more and more people are coming out of the closet, no pun intended, and talking to their doctors about it. But it's something that's been around a long time, but it was not talked about because people were too embarrassed.
How's the sex for the partner, though? They complaining, or?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. In some of the case studies, the partner complained and, of course, felt, rejected or didn't like it. And in some of the cases, because it was happening in their sleep, and in some of the cases, the partners actually said, well, they liked it.
Pretty so, good. Turning me on here.
All types of people.
Because you probably get a little freaky, I would imagine, if you're sleeping, and you know what I mean?
That's what it is. The person is asleep. They really are asleep in terms of their higher cortical centers are not aware of what they're doing.
Check out the videos of the Ambien stuff, and you know, talk to your physician about it, because that's a very serious issue and what people do when they're on this stuff too, or just not getting enough sleep via because of things like sleep apnea or sexsomnia, for example. Dr. Rosenberg, again, the website is answersforsleep.com. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Gotcha. Coming up in just a few minutes, we got to get back into the Manti Te'o thing. A lot of questions centering around the behavior of this kid, this young man. And namely, that is this. If you're Manti Te'o, why would you do that? What is the reason for coming up with a fake girlfriend? Why would you do that? What's give me motive. 513-749-7800, the big one. #700, AT&T. We'll talk about all the possibilities of that, plus your calls just ahead on the big forecast out from Fox 19, a mix of clouds and sun, more clouds and sun, and 39, partly cloudy, 23 tonight, and guess what? Cloud-sun mix, 37 tomorrow. It is Groundhog Day. Although it changed a little bit this weekend, it'll be like windy on Saturday, warmer too, high near 50. Sunny, cold again on Sunday with a high near 29, so once the front moves through, bottom falls out. But precipitation, we don't see any coming up, so that's good, right? 33 now on the Scott Sloan Show at 700 WLW. Let's get back into the Manti Te'o discussion, which is going to be the narrative here on this radio station the rest of the day and possibly the rest of the year, just because there are so many different angles. There are so many different layers. This thing is resuming a blooming onion. In that you have a guy, a star linebacker, a guy who during the season performed when his grandmother died and his girlfriend died following a car accident and following a diagnosis of cancer within 24 hours of one another. And then led Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish, to a BCS title game. Great story, except that it didn't happen. The grandmother did die, but there was no girlfriend. Fabricated. Entirely made up. Notre Dame and Te'o now say they were victimized, too. He had no idea that his girlfriend was indeed fake after a three-year relationship, in that she never wanted to meet him, talk to him on Skype, or anything else. That's a lot of questions. Question number one is, if you're Manti Te'o, why would you do this? I'm not buying the victim story, though. I'm buying the victim thing. How could you not know that this person wasn't real, especially since it went on for 3 years. 3 months, 6 months, yeah, I can see that. All right, you know, I'm at Notre Dame, you're at Stanford, okay. But it went on for 3 years. And during the 3 years, obviously, they never met. So how could you not, there's no way you could be the most gullible person in the world, because you actually have people saying, oh, yeah, I met her. Yeah, when I saw her at Stanford, his father said, yeah, she should come out to Hawaii and they would they'd meet there. It's mind-boggling. So the question is motive. The motive behind this. If you're Manti Te'o, you get involved in this. Why? And for what reasons? To what ends do you create a fictitious girlfriend? Whether it's the speculation that he's gay or it had to do with the Heisman, your thoughts, 513-749-7800, the big one, and #700 AT&T and the Manti Te'o controversy today. Scott Sloan, news is next, and then your thoughts just ahead on the big one, 700 WLW. Sloaney on the big one, 700 WLW. Your chance at $50,000 comes up 1/2 hour from now, and how it works is this. We'll tell you when to call. When you hear the cue to call, we'll give you a keyword, and you're to text that keyword, whatever it is, to this number, 36500, 36500. And text that when you get the keyword, put it in there, and you could win $50,000 just like that from the big one, 700 WLW, coming up in a half hour from now, right? So the story of Manti Te'o and Lene Kakua, who doesn't exist, just continues to take odd and weird plots. Speculation is now that Manti Te'o will be at Notre Dame giving some sort of press conference or statement today. Don't know if questions will be answered, and I would be surprised, honestly, that he would go through the press conference at this stage. It's just not a smart move on his part, because there are just so many questions out there. This is a guy who led Notre Dame to the BCS title game, did so allegedly carrying a heavy heart by losing his girlfriend and his grandmother within 24 hours of one another. grandmother simply dying of old age. The girlfriend, who was in a car accident, was later discovered to have bone cancer, then succumbed to her illness, allegedly, 24 hours before or after the grandma, depending on which story you hear, and at which point we've learned that this girlfriend did not exist. And it's a very bizarre story, namely, and number one is, if you're Manti Te'o, why would you make up the story of a fictitious girlfriend? Now, he says, and the university claims that he was duped. But it doesn't add up. All right, so you have a girlfriend for 3 years, and the story is that you met her after a game at Stanford, because she goes to Stanford, Te'o went to Notre Dame, that you met, you exchanged numbers, and you engaged in an online relationship from afar, from Indiana to California. And in the three-year period you allegedly were dating, you never, ever saw each other? Except there are people around whom who said they met her. And it turns out that the person posing as the fictitious girlfriend, Lene Kukua, is actually a guy by the name of Rarani Tuisosopo, who played high school football, who has had contact with Manti Te'o. What? So this guy was posing as the fictitious girlfriend. Now, the missing link here, of course, is this Tuisosopo dude, and whether or not he acted by himself or he knew Manti Te'o. But so we'll find out about that eventually, I would think. But the crazy thing about this, right, is, okay, you haven't met this girl. You're dating for 3 years. I mean, look, if I'm Manti Te'o and I'm saying I'm part of this thing, I've been fooled too. Wouldn't you just produce phone records showing that you were on phone with her for 8 hours like you claimed when she was lying there dying? And you would be in Indiana? It's just a bizarre story. And the fact that it's just coming out now is even crazier. I mean, if you're Manti Te'o, what's the end game here? Why would you carry on the relationship for 3 years? But the speculation is that he certainly knew what was going on simply because he knew the guy. And because of the nature of the relationship going on this long, how could you not know that this person wouldn't even Skype with you? It was strictly, or talk to you even. It was strictly done online because this woman didn't exist. Is it because he was embarrassed to have an online girlfriend? The speculation is that Manti Te'o, is he homosexual? And that because he is a Mormon at a Catholic school, that would be frowned upon and there would be, that he's a handsome, strong man and could have the pick of any woman he wanted on campus pretty much and would be a very sought-after companion by the females on the campus at Notre Dame, that he'd try to cover that by saying, sorry, I already have a girlfriend. Was that his out? Or was this just a ruse in order to improve his chances of getting the Heisman that eventually went to Johnny Football? That he saw maybe the narrative all season was, hey, Johnny Football is getting all the attention in Texas. I got to do something. I got to maybe, you know, I got to do something here, and I had this fictitious girlfriend, and, you know, instead of just saying we broke up, I make her have cancer and die, well, maybe that'll gain me some point. I don't know. I would think all of that is on the table, and there's probably more I'm not even, couldn't even think of as far as the speculation as to why you would do something like this. 513-749-7000, 800, the big one, and #700 AT&T. On a cell, Mark and Blue Ash, you're on the Scott Sloan Show. Good morning.
Hey, Scott. Just want to let you know that this actually does happen a lot more, and I don't know how this story will play out. I haven't really followed it, but there's actually a show on MTV right now called Catfish.
Right.
And my wife started watching it, so I sat down and watched it with her. And there was an episode on last night that this kid up in Michigan, I mean, he's not a kid. He was, I don't know, 19, 20, 21 years old. And he'd carried on a relationship with this girl that was supposed, I mean, they showed her pictures. She had all these profile pictures on Facebook. And for 2 years, a year and a half, 2 years, and she would never meet him. There was always an excuse, never talked to him on the phone. So these guys set up a meeting, and they get this supposed girl to meet with this guy. And she's in a different town. And when they knock on the door, a black guy comes out who is gay. And they go through the whole thing and they ask him why he would do this. And It was just bizarre.
It's like a whole, and I know that the show on MTV is based on a movie called Catfish. And there's actually people out there that do this, where the catfish is actually
multiple,
just a
multiple profiles,
right? Yeah. And they just pretend to be someone else. They're not by and stealing someone else's picture. And so,
But the amount of people that will go in a relationship for a year, 2 years, or 3 years and never meet somebody, and some of them never speak to them on the phone, is absolutely we couldn't believe it.
Are you that lonely, or it's like the selfish? I don't know why you would do that and going, all right, after 3 years, I want to meet you, but you won't show me, you won't talk to me on the phone, you won't Skype, I can't see your face, can't meet face to face.
There has been some of those where the person that was doing the fake profile actually would have somebody else speak on the phone for them, and so that way they could continue the whole ruse, and it didn't. But again, it's just bizarre how somebody can go that long. And they showed some of the messages between these two, and this guy, he was pissed because he was, you know, there were some of the messages that were sexual in context, and he was embarrassed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, you could just tell that this guy was mortified, and it was more about what he had engaged in writing back and forth than anything, and how he was duped. So, you know, where this ends up going, I guess it is possible this guy was duped. And like you said, maybe he was embarrassed to tell somebody he had an online girlfriend. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe embarrassed since it's gone on that long. But I think, too, doesn't it seem to you that the stigma of online dating has disappeared? Because things like Match.com, I know so many people that are in relationships that started online. It just doesn't seem to have the stigma it once did.
No, right, exactly. I agree totally with you. Yeah. So that's it.
Maybe gotcha. Thanks again, brother. Appreciate it. Opens up a line at 513-749-7000, 800, the big one, #700, AT&T. There's the catfish aspect, too. Catfishing is using someone, stealing someone's pictures on Facebook or social media, reposting it, and creating this whole fictitious persona that used to sexually be what you did when you called a 800 or 900 sex number, where, like, you knew the woman on the other end really wasn't this hot, voluptuous blonde, but rather kind of looked like, I don't know, Janet Reno. But you pretend, I guess. But now it's reached a whole different level with Facebook and social media, and you can engage in an online relationship with a lot of people are in. And maybe that's the thing with Manti Te'o, is that he wanted to have some sort of connection. But then again, it wasn't like he didn't have access to people. So I don't understand. Maybe he has some social phobias, meeting girls. I don't know. It's an amazing story with the Te'o girlfriend hoax as we continue to talk about this. Coming up at 11:06, we'll reset this with Ken Brew. What does this mean for Notre Dame and, in this case, Manti Te'o's future in the National Football League? Plus, he'll have more information about this, the story as we continue to unfold here. And it's unfolding like an accordion this morning. Scott Sloan Show, 700 WLW, back with a quick check of sports, your calls, and we're 20 minutes away from right now, 20 minutes, your chance at $50,000. It's all coming up. Scott Sloan, 700 WLW. Last night against BG, 63-60 at home. LaSalle beats Dayton, 72-70. Xavier's AD, Mike Babinski, announcing he is gone. He's taken the AD's job at Georgia Tech. He's been with X since 1998. The Bearcats in action Saturday against Marquette. What is the status of Cash Wright? Mick Cronin explains. The coaches show live tonight at 8:05 at the original Montgomery Inn, heard on the home of the Cats, 700 WLW. And the story of the day, well, there are two actually. Lance Armstrong's Oprah thing appears tonight, and she's kind of angry because I'm sure the story of the day that's overshadowing that whole thing is the story of Manti Te'o, Notre Dame star linebacker, falling victim allegedly to a hoax in which his supposed girlfriend died 24 hours from his grandmother's death during the football season. He then went on to lead Notre Dame to the BCS title game. Apparently that all is a hoax. The girlfriend is not real. And that comes on the heels of a Deadspin.com report. There's no record of the 22-year-old ever existing. There you go. And the thing, too, with that, with Deadspin, did a great job in the article, Deadspin.com, is that they actually did the research that ESPN, Sports Illustrated, and other media outlets that reported this feel-good story, this uplifting human drama that was overcome by Manti Te'o. It never existed. They ran numerous Nexus reports and background checks and everything, and the girlfriend, Lene Kakua, never existed. They found no birth record. They found no death record. They found no accident record. She was never enrolled in Stanford. Never happened. She did not exist. The image of her was stolen. No, I shouldn't say stolen. It was catfished by this guy that Manti Te'o knew, Ronnie Tuiasosopo, who played football at a high level in high school as well. And just odd connections in this thing, which leads you to believe that Manti Te'o knew what was going on. I just couldn't imagine he didn't. Hey, Neil and Sunman, you're on the Scott Sloan Show. What's up?
You know what? My take on this whole thing is it really goes to show the degradation of society that they become so consumed in social media. I mean, this stuff happens every day because people don't get out and have a real life and socially interact with real people. Their entire lives revolve around Twitter and Facebook and social media like that. I mean, it's really sick.
I don't know if it's sick. I think it is. I think it's the nature, the changing nature of communication. I mean, communication has always changed over the years, from the invention of a movable type and the Gutenberg Bible, all the way to the internet and social media and mobile devices today. And certainly, it's easier to communicate with people than even the world away than ever before. I don't know. So this is a downside of it, but I don't think overall it's a bad thing.
Well, you know, technology changes, yes, but does technology always change for the better? Was it, you know, a bullet is one thing, but is it a nuclear missile that can destroy half the world a good thing?
It's like anything. Depends on what it's being used for. It depends what the motive, what the intent is, and in the intent of the internet. Obviously, we're exposed to more information in 6 months than someone who lived 200 years ago, got in their entire lifetime. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying it is out there, and certainly it has improved lives. But like anything, there's a downside to it, and this would be one of them. You're right on that.
Well, yeah. No, I agree that the information that is available through the internet and things like that is a wonderful thing. You know, I do a lot of research myself on the computer, on Google and Wikipedia and what such. But you've got people in this world that spend every waking minute on Facebook. You know, they don't get out and socialize with real live people. These people, you know, most of them have anxiety problems, depression, and things like that that could be easily overcome by going out and saying, "Hey, Sloaney, what's going on?"
Yeah, I mean, I get that too, but you know, you're socializing with many more people than you could in the past. So, is it sensory overload? Yeah, I think there's some interesting things that my mom says. Oh, these computers are ruining everybody's lives. No, they actually make your life better. When you look at the score at the end of it, certainly there's much more upside to the technology than there is downside. But there certainly is downside, and that's a good point. There very well could be it could be some sort of social media thing going on here. You know, there's countless. Look at it this way. As far as socialization goes, if you go back 30 years, 20 years even, and you were that loner, ostracized, outcast kid in high school. You had no friends, no one wanted to be, no one wanted to hang out with you. You were a geek, you were a nerd. You now, because of Skype, because of the internet, because of games that have forums, chat room areas in them, you now have a community. You have friends. You have people who feel the same way you do. You now have a sense of belonging and community online. Before, you never had that. You never had that. So that would be an upside to that thing. I'll get to Steve and Valerie, who says it's not hard to be deceived online. Did Valerie fall victim to a catfish romance? We'll get to her in 4 minutes, plus 1106 Ken Brew, the very latest on what we know about Manti Te'o coming up here. Scott Sloan on 700 WL. Thursdays with Brew coming up. Scott Sloan talk about Manti Te'o in this bizarre case. Real quick before that, and your shot at 50K coming up in 8 minutes on the big one. Valerie Westchester, what do you got?
I just want to say that you keep talking about Manti Te'o being so gullible and nobody can be that dumb. And I just feel that when somebody practices to deceive you and go out of their way, it's not that hard to be deceived.
You know, I would, if this were a 6 month relationship, but the fact that it went on for 3 years, and every time they tried to get together, which, you know, she wouldn't go on Skype, she wouldn't meet him face to face. According to the story, this fictitious woman, that makes me more suspicious. You know what I'm saying?
I agree, and I want to know what was going on. Where, you know, his dad was saying they met in Hawaii, and
right.
I don't really know how it all came out and how the whole story came about. You know, maybe they never did meet. But I think when somebody is going out of their way to deceive you, it's easy to be deceived.
Especially when it's an affair of the heart.
Sure, because online, you know, you get that immediate connection and mm-hmm. you say things you might not say to somebody that you've never met before or that, you know, that you're meeting face to face.
Right.
You spill your guts online.
Well, speaking of relationships, I mean, how many people have been or are in relationships where that person is cheating and they ignore all the warning signs?
Well, I was going to say that.
Same thing, right?
I'm actually a therapist, and I deal with couples who, you know, there is an affair in the relationship, and the wife feels, or whoever is deceived, feels so stupid. This went on for a year and a half. How could I not know?
Yeah, because you don't want to say it.
I've had husbands say, don't feel bad. I was trying to deceive you. I went out of my way to lie and to make it so you would never find out.
Right, because you don't want to believe the worst I got. Hey, Valerie, thanks for checking on the Scott Sloan Show. Your chance at $50,000 happening is 6 minutes from right now on the Home of the Reds, 700 WLW.